This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum, and today we're having a discussion about some of the more recent developments in community choice energy across the country. Our first presenter is Samuel Golding. Samuel, why don't you go ahead and start us out?
Okay. Thanks, Sierra. I guess I'll focus primarily on a bit on California and also the new market in New Hampshire that I've been involved with. They're both related in various interesting ways. At a very high level, I view community choice, I think as many of you know, as a very flexible construct that can be adapted to local conditions and should be, I believe, with the goal of building institutional capacity and expertise in the energy sector at the local level everywhere, so that communities and customer groups and local municipal governments begin to more deeply understand what the barriers are to achieving their policy goals in practice, and then work together with other stakeholders in the power sector to remove those barriers and evolve the system together collaboratively. So in California right now, there's about 200 local governments operating 19 or so community choice power agencies. So a lot of them have joined together under these joint action governance boards, and they're running fairly large operations. And they're also collaborating now and soliciting services together. So, for example, 5 agencies recently contracted for capacity portfolio management services in a single solicitation. We see a lot of that sort of coordinating activity also on creating reach codes, working with the local governments across multiple counties to all do that in tandem together, et cetera, et cetera. Also project development, power procurement. They're starting to gain a real economy of scale and standardization in the market. They're also, in response to the wildfires that have been causing blackouts in California, where particularly PG&E that recently declared bankruptcy for the second time, but they started to black out substantial portions of the power grid because of the risk of high winds and wildfires being caused by energized power lines. So they de-energize them and take hundreds of thousands of customers off service. And these are more substantial than what occurred during the energy crisis, in fact. And there's significant lost economic growth, well, revenues. I mean, everything grinds to a halt, really. And so community choice agencies have been increasingly extending their view and sphere of influence into the grid architecture and really physical reliability and security concerns around this. So we have, for example, Sonoma Clean Power has started to weigh in. They formed a wires team, hired consultants, started doing analytics. Sonoma was hit very hard with wildfires. And now they're kind of weighing in on how PG&E is going about their resiliency plans. And most recently, they critiqued how Pacific Gas and Electric had structured their request for offers for power generation at the local level that's intended to boost resilience. And so what I'm seeing is really community choice agencies coming into a new level of engagement where they're really, representing frontline concerns about how to best go about what is traditionally just the, you know, the distribution utilities domain of influence, how to architect the grid to be more resilient in the future. And I think that's a really critical function for municipalities and communities and customer groups to be directly engaged with in California at this moment. And I can point people towards resources to list out all the other resiliency initiatives that CCAs are engaging with. Okay, now in New Hampshire, community choice was authorized in the late summer, and I've been engaged here since I was invited in to help lobby the governor's office to pass community choice. And it was a bipartisan bill, and it was written by Cliff Belo, who co-wrote the first utility restructuring act in the country, actually, years ago, and who is now doing a transactive energy partnership with an investor-owned utility, Dartmouth University, and the city that he is a counselor and vice mayor of, Lebanon. And so they have this very interesting forward-looking transactive energy pilot going on, and Cliff wrote their CCA law with an eye towards helping spread and accelerate this sort of innovation throughout the state. And so he gave community choice agencies certain unique enabling authorities here that I haven't seen in other laws. For example, CCAs in New Hampshire are allowed to put in their own smart meters or allow their customers to do so, and their own kind of communications architecture and data processing architecture to go along with that. So I from the get-go, the model of community choice that was expected here and how it was framed was very much oriented around innovative retail services, DER integration, grid modernization, a more collaborative approach to working with the utilities and helping the regulatory commission evaluate those sorts of investments. And that's how we framed it. And I viewed it also as this opportunity where we could take all the lessons learned in other markets, particularly California, and kind of summarize them here and give them to stakeholders so that this market could leapfrog over all of that and just launch with the sorts of operating models and governance models that we know to be the most successful. So specifically, there are about 240 municipalities in New Hampshire, and already a quarter of them have volunteer energy committees formed. So there's about 70 local energy committees, and they coordinate regionally already, and there's various nonprofits and kind of everyone knows everyone else here, and they share best practices and so on and so forth. So it's a great kind of governance architecture already in place. And so what we've been doing is working with stakeholders and the leading municipalities who want to go forward on CCA first. And they've recently all gotten together and agreed to form a steering committee to explore doing that through a joint action framework. So this would be a single operating platform for the entire state, which standardizes the CCA retail services and kind of functions across all four investor-owned utility territories, and allows all of the communities involved to kind of pick and choose the best service providers for the various advanced functions that they want to be doing and put them together into a single integrated scaled operating platform. And so they're in the early stages of assessing how to go about doing that. And it's very similar to the direction that the California industry has been taking. And so I've been kind of facilitating introductions between key stakeholders here and almost their counterparts in California, and enjoying a very rich collaboration and kind of sharing of knowledge across the country. And I guess I'll leave it there, and we can go on, and we can come back for questions after the other panelists, speakers, go through updates for their regions.
All right. Rich, you want to add something to that? Well, you know, actually, first, before we do that, I'd like to make a comment here. Colorado is looking at, well, they're introducing a bill or trying to introduce a bill that will actually allow the investigation of a CCE in Colorado. And at the moment, it's not something that we can do. So if anybody has any information, and I have talked to a few of you already, that would help out as far as the successes in various areas of the country, that would be very helpful. They have letters or something. So please contact me after the call, and we can talk about where we might go from there. So, all right. Rick, go ahead. Rick Brown, Terra Verde Energy, Mountain, California.
Great. Thanks, Sierra. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add to what Samuel said about California, other than some specifics. I agree, you know, the example that Sam talked about at Sonoma Clean Power in terms of getting into the conversation around the grid and wires side of things is really profound, I would say. And if anybody really wants to geek out on this, the board packet, you can go online, but the board packet for the Sonoma Clean Power Board of Directors in December has a, 6 to 8 page discussion written by Jeff Cypers, their general manager, that is very, besides just talking about what's going on in California, has some, I think, really deep insights into why and how the decentralization effort that is being accomplished by CCAs has implications beyond just the providing, services and energy, but also getting into the grid management side. So I'd highly encourage people interested in this to look at that board packet. In that regard, also, besides the talk, as Sam said, you know, CCAs are actually putting money where their mouth is. And part of that is because around resilience in particular, in concert with their need to use distributed resources or engage distributed resources as a way to manage some of their costs, particularly their resource adequacy costs. Sonoma Clean Power has contracted with my company to evaluate 37 municipal facilities that currently have solar for the addition of battery storage to be able to provide not only for some resource adequacy needs, but also to provide resilience during grid outage events, either disaster caused or public safety power shutoff caused events. We're also working with, we also have a contract with MCE, which has got a two-phase approach to, again, similar kind of thing, incentivizing battery storage for both municipal and other kinds of critical services. And then there's a group of CCAs, three CCAs, Peninsula Clean Energy, Silicon Valley Clean Energy, and East Bay Community Energy, who also partnered with a Muni, Silicon Valley Energy, and the four of them put out a joint RFP for, again, battery storage, for both this resource adequacy need, but also essentially for resilience, and we're supporting one of those CCAs around how that program gets rolled out. So they're putting their money where their mouth is, so to speak, not just talking about this. And the other place where that's happening, and Sam's very well aware of this, the city of San Francisco and Clean Power SF, their CCA, actually put in a proposal in the PG&E bankruptcy proceedings to take over the wires in their jurisdiction, as did Valley Clean Energy, a CCA located in Yolo County. And then the mayor of San Jose, Sam Liccardo, again, that just formed their own citywide CCA, San Jose Clean Energy, also has put forward proposals around essentially either a state takeover of PG&E or formation of a co-op that would essentially take over PG&E. Now, that's all those efforts are in the context of this bankruptcy proceeding and how that all plays out over the next, frankly, 6 months. And really, the deadline on that is the end of June, because some kind of agreement has to be reached about how PG&E restructures in relation to a fund that the state has set up, that such that the governor has to approve their plan in order for PG&E to have access to a $21 billion fund. So the CCAs are not just standing on the sideline around this issue. They're weighing in very, very aggressively, both in terms of, again, these takeover bids, the co-op idea, and, again, putting their money where their mouth is. Last thing I would say, I do have a little bit of non-California update in that I got a call yesterday from a representative to the House of Delegates in Maryland who got my name from one of my board members wanting to talk about her interest in introducing legislation in Maryland regarding formation of CCAs. And so, Sam, watch out, because I'm going to be referring her to you, because this is not my area. But but anyway, yeah. So, you know, clearly this is popping up in many different places.
As far as I can see, Sam is going to be a busy guy. So, yeah. You didn't know what you were getting into, did you?
It's getting easier. I won't talk at length, but I'm just going to say, like, the ability to really crystallize and communicate best practices and connect new local stakeholders to ones that are already operating in the industry, it's really kind of getting down to a science. And local stakeholders, particularly in New Hampshire, have really impressed me with their knowledge and their ability to kind of take that ball and run with it and adapt the insights to their unique considerations. So it might not be as much work as we think once this, like, all these information sharing networks get in place and start sharing best practices.
Well, that sounds encouraging. We certainly can use some of that. So, Peter, do you have anything to add to this? Peter Millman from Connecticut.
Yeah. First of all, it is it's a very different exercise trying to create CCAs and coordinate the behaviors and practices and work of the CCAs in a state that enables CCAs than what's going on here in Connecticut, which is that we're still at the starting gate. Connecticut still needs to pass legislation to enable CCA. And we really are starting from almost a zero speed because when I started working on bringing CCA to Connecticut very, very late in 2018, I was really shocked by the tiny, tiny number of people I ran into who had any inkling as to what CCA is. And considering that we're surrounded by CCA states, New York, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. Now, Rhode Island is not very active in the CCA realm right at the moment, but we really are starting from zero. So early in 2019, we introduced two skeleton bills, CCA bills, just to get the ball rolling. They pretty much went nowhere in the Energy and Technology Committee. And myself and a couple of other people who have made CCA their main focus decided that we needed to use this year to create some momentum, increase the knowledge base of CCA. And we've been plugging away. There are probably now about 20 organizations in Connecticut, including the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters and the Acadia Center, which is a New England think tank, energy think tank, and some other organizations which you would not recognize the names of, but at least getting some of the environmental and clean energy groups familiar with CCA and voicing some support. We've also been working on getting municipalities to pass resolutions supporting CCA at the state level. So not passing, you know, CCA creation resolutions or legislation, but just saying, could the state please enable CCA so we can do this? And so far, we've gotten four towns. New Haven is the one that you would probably recognize if you're not from Connecticut. Middletown is a middling-sized city. Then there are two smaller cities or two smaller towns, Mansfield and Simsbury, have passed resolutions. And we have others in the works. And this seems like a valuable exercise because we have to start the discussion with town officials and local clean energy advocates as to what the heck CCA is so that when enabling legislation passes someday, they can swing into action and create them. But it also sends a message to state legislators. And so this is part of what we've been doing. Finally, we've been talking to state legislators. We have probably about 15 who have voiced support. We've also been trying to get some key people in state government, namely the co-chairs of the Energy and Technology Committee, who have been neutral. Let's call it that, neutral, neither distinctly for or against. I've spoken with the commissioner of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection here in Connecticut, and she is at best neutral, but with some real concerns. I've also spoken with the chair of the Public Utility Regulatory Authority, and she is also, I would say, at best neutral, with some real concerns. She, by the way, worked in Maryland and I think wrote a report on CCAs. Her name is Marissa Gillette. I think that in general she's a reformer and will have a positive effect on the energy scene here in Connecticut. But so far we do not have a strong, highly placed supporter, so we're having to build our structure up from the ground. I'd say that there's, you know, selling the idea of CCA to people who are not familiar with it is an interesting exercise because I'm totally on board with people who are far more knowledgeable about CCA than I, like Samuel and others, that the simple original conception of CCA as a buying cooperative is not really the model that we want to follow. And yet that's the one that people understand and that you can sort of get them hooked on. So my pitch is often this, which is there's a simple form of CCA. Here's what it is, and it has some benefits. No guarantees, but it's generally beneficial. And I am aware, Samuel, of your writings about Illinois. But then also to throw in very clearly that CCA is has evolved since the original form, and that's really where we want to go. And we look to California and to some a little bit Massachusetts and a little bit of New York too. And I have spoken to, just by the way, I'll finish up, but I'll just say that I have been fascinated by what's going on in New Hampshire. It's a lot easier to get the attention of stakeholders here about something that's happening in a New England state rather than California. Sorry to be that provincial, but that's the way it is. And I've spoken to them and just think that the model that seems to be emerging there with Samuel's help is just totally fascinating. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead. No, that's all right. Go ahead. But I want to invite Jerry Braun to participate in this conversation as well. But go ahead, Samuel, and I'll bring him in.
Oh, I didn't know he was on the line. Great.
Yes.
Hi, Jerry. I'll be brief. one of the most exciting things about this evolution, in my mind, is that we have the opportunity to now explain the more, I guess, advanced or model of CCA that gives communities and the entire state, really, the entire industry, in my view, a bigger value proposition. And it's very bipartisan. It's very focused on kind of, you know, helping the energy industry evolve, filling a critical gap, because so much infrastructure has to be on the grid side and very tailored to local conditions. And it's not something that regulatory commissions and utilities are good at. And so there's, if you frame CCA as kind of filling that gap, a lot more people understand that, it, in my direct experience here, they readily understand that there's a gap and that this would be a very useful mechanism to fill it and get more nimble governance, better local infrastructure investments, and kind of more DER integration, more retail customer demand flexibility, and that sort of thing deployed in their states and in their communities. So I think we've gotten pretty good at explaining that in a concise way in New Hampshire, leveraging everything that's gone on for more than a decade. And now we're at this moment where a lot of other states are looking at what sort of legislation they should pass, how should they think about CCA. And so it's a real opportunity to leapfrog progress in multiple states in the near term.
Okay. Jerry, do you want to make some comments here? You might have a little different perspective.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Sierra. I don't have necessarily a different perspective. I just am really, I want to compliment all three for Sam and Rick and Peter for, you know, the three different perspectives that are really, really well earned and excellent. And I especially just a comment on just a reflection on each one. I think the what I took away from Sam, and I've been concerned about this for a long time, that I'm glad for the kind of the movement in the direction of, I'll just use the general term that Sam used a few times, toward collaboration. You know, we have in California, quite honestly, collaboration is more difficult because of the political impulse to punish, you know, the problem, you know, because of the wildfires and some past history where, you know, where the one investor-owned utility in particular was a little bit overreached in terms of trying to shut down local initiatives to be involved in energy, which I think was a, you know, complete mistake. But I think that Sam said was it was very, very rich, but I think the story from California in terms of what are the leading, the larger CCAs and how they are engaging, you know, in a more integrative way between, you know, the original CCA focus, which was energy supply resources. Now making the connection between the grid management and the grid operations, and how can grid operations be decentralized and you know, and promote more local resource development and that sort of thing. That's really encouraging to hear that story. Rick's the thing I wanted to kind of highlight from what Rick said is the comment about working between the CCAs and the member jurisdictions who actually, as you pointed out, in California, in many cases, have solar on municipal facilities. This is a big opportunity for collaboration between the CCAs and their member jurisdictions. And I've got to insert a note of caution in that there's a for the smaller CCAs, at least in smaller municipalities, there's a significant bandwidth problem with doing that. The most municipalities and smaller ones don't have much energy expertise, and the CCAs are lightly staffed in some cases too. So that's a tall order, but we're making some progress on it a little bit at BCE in Yolo County. So I'm very hopeful that we can, that's a very good trend, because it does address the resource adequacy cost issue directly. And then lastly, there was a mention of the, I think Rick may have mentioned the asset bids that have been kind of triggered by the PG&E bankruptcy. As mentioned, the Valley Clean Energy, that I've been working with Valley Clean Energy for quite a while as an advisor, but the asset bids, I think now that we've seen how things are playing out, it's not likely that the bankruptcy court is going to be able to deliver any progress on that. But from my point of view, the very important thing about that is that at least in our case, I think it was, going back to something Sam said, it was a consciousness raising kind of thing for our elected officials locally to really think about how does CCA enable things to happen that haven't been able to happen in the past. Obviously, owning a local grid gives you huge opportunities to do a lot of the things that the CCA, the original CCA vision, anticipated and it's evolving toward. So, there are pros and cons of municipalization, and that's something that I think the CCAs need to dig into, because it may be on the horizon. So I'll end there. But thank you all so much for the reports. It's very encouraging, and you're doing wonderful work. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right. Any more interaction here with the panel? Questions, comments?
Well, maybe Jerry can speak to this, but a lot of my thinking about how to frame CCA in a more collaborative and bipartisan fashion, with an eye towards structural change in the power sector that's playing out and really needs to play out, we need to figure out how to evolve the sector, has been informed by Lorenzo Kristoff and Jerry's thoughts and the ACE campaign in California, Advanced Community Energy, as a policy construct. So perhaps he could talk a little bit, give an update there.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sam. It wasn't one of my first reactions, but it's a very important point. I'm glad you mentioned it. There is now some coherent, well-informed, organized thinking about this question of evolution, and I think it's captured in this Advanced Community Energy vision. Right now, it is and Sam, you may know more about it than I do. It is more of a vision, it appears to me, than a set of, specific proposals. But the key thing about it is that it's also doing at the state level what what I mentioned, the you know, the asset bids are doing at the local level, it's kind of it's prompting some more strategic view of how things should evolve, and I think it's really important. I just haven't personally had the bandwidth to you know, to engage on it. I'm more working at the ground level, looking up and how, you know, what are the barriers to you know, to doing some of the things that are part of the longer term vision. You know, what can we do now versus what do we have to wait to do, and things like that. So, but thank you for mentioning that. It's a very important initiative.
Sure. Sierra held my feet to the fire last July, and we put out a webinar called Deep Decarbonization, and it really centered on this evolutionary trend, the political drivers, kind of all the activity going on across the country, and it highlighted the ACE campaign in California as something everyone could probably think about and adapt for their own benefit locally. And it really, the key insight there is that the near-term future is very, very different than the current power sector.
Right.
We've set in motion kind of top-down and bottom-up technology change. And it's really stressing and overwhelming our current way of governance and planning and operating the power sector. And so a lot of it has to do with getting kind of reorienting the planning framework from just being utilities and a state regulator to being focused on local and regional infrastructure requirements necessary to rapidly decarbonize multiple sectors of the economy. So, you know, the buildings and the land use and the natural gas systems, heating fuel oil systems, the electrical infrastructure to kind of manage all of the new electric vehicles and heating, et cetera, et cetera. All of that plays out really at the local and regional economic level. And so I think the ACE campaign, their key structural insight is that we need to build those new relationships. We need to get municipalities and communities engaged and integrated into how we plan and operate the power sector. So they've put forward a vision of how to do that systematically, with the state providing funding and technical resources for how, and the way that informed my thinking on CCA was the CCA construct can be a mechanism by which, using the, you know, the strong motivation that a lot of communities have to get more engaged in governing their energy future. That's a business model that brings expertise, that brings revenue, and you can kind of quickly inflate an operating model. And that starts to teach everyone about deeper and deeper layers of how the power sector functions in practice and what they should be doing and who they should be talking to. And so if we start architecting the rollout of CCA in new states with this in mind, it could really make it real faster than we otherwise, you know, would be able to do.
Yeah, this is Jerry again. If I can, I don't want to take too much of the airtime here, but I want to key off a little bit what Sam just said. It's really important. And I not to compartmentalize, but what we, the operating models obviously need to evolve. And what I'm seeing is that you still have to start with the vision. And I'll be specific in terms of our CCA experience. When our city initiated the CCA investigation, one of the first things we did was to come up with a vision. And the important point was that we compartmentalized it into a short-term vision and a long-term vision. The short-term vision was really basically what can you do with the existing operating model. The long-term vision, now in retrospect, really requires some changes in the operating model. And the experience has been, and this is probably unique to us in a way, the experience has been the focus, because of the financial contingencies, and and we haven't talked about that, but there's quite a bit of risk that the local elected officials who are on these boards are managing. And the short term look is, how do we manage this risk? How do we achieve the short term vision, which is partly about managing risk? And to some extent, and I hope it's not true in general, but it certainly has been true in our case, 2 years in, some of us are really having to push to say, let's not forget about what the long-term vision was. And at that point, at the point that we refocus or are able to also cope with this on the long-term vision, we can start thinking about what the operating model should be going forward. It's one thing to propose to acquire distribution assets. It's another thing of, what are you going to do after the dog catches the bus? I'm just kind of saying I totally agree, Sam. We do have some work to do. I think it's really important to have that two-part vision. I guess that would be my comment, basically, and I would encourage that as a strategy, basically.
And the way that I encourage people to ask this question when they're considering exactly what you just described going through, how do we best architect the governance, the management, and the operations of this agency so that it can evolve as quickly as possible? So it needs to be nimble and flexible, needs to be transparently run. And if you really start asking that question at each stage of the design process, it can make a really big difference in terms of which services are put in place, what's kind of provided in-house in terms of expertise versus outsourced, how the contracts are structured. And really for states that are considering enabling legislation, the question should be asked right then. In other words, what sorts of authorities should we be putting into the law so that community choice agencies are able to evolve through successive stages of sophistication as rapidly as possible? So you can actually remove a lot of barriers to that evolutionary process right when you're putting pen to paper on the enabling legislation and framing everyone's expectations around that.
I would like to interrupt here and see if anybody else, we only have 10 minutes left, who has not had a chance to speak, has some comments.
Yeah, hi, this is Bob Perry. I kind of came in there late, but I've been following Samuel's work, and I work within the ACE group, regarding the policy development side. And I think this is a critical component. I as to the risks part, I think that one of the large issues out there right now in California is the provider of last resort issue. And I think that people are realizing that the state is the provider of last resort. Utilities like PG&E who have not met their obligations, there's a reason for that. And I think the state needs to kind of look in the mirror and realize that, it to some degree failed in its obligation to make sure that the utilities are delivering resiliency. I think that the state can provide that kind of risk assurance to local communities, and CCAs play a critical part because their jurisdiction spread across multiple localities, and as a procurement entity, they are able to establish programs within, you know, state regulations and aggregate resources to help the smaller communities more affordably become resilient. There's one short track component that is emerging, and that's the need for microgrids at critical facilities. I don't think there's a locality that doesn't need a microgrid at a critical facility, most of which are publicly owned. So I think that's kind of a good short-term approach towards a longer-term vision to make energy part of the local planning process.
That's
any
a really good
comments?
Point. Good points, yeah. This is Jerry again. Can I inject one thing back? I hadn't commented on governance or anything like that because it's not my focus.
Go ahead.
But I would like to just ask a question, I guess, of Sam and others. It strikes me that we have that one of the things that's going to be needed as the CCAs become more robust and evolve is, you know, right now we have elected officials, on the governing boards from each of the jurisdictions. They are very good. They are also have serious bandwidth issues. They're on a lot of boards. In many cases, they're volunteers, not paid. When we set this up initially in our area, I had a thought that it would probably be good to have an elected board. And when I talk to other people about it, people would say, we could get to that, but I think it would make a huge difference in bringing in some energy expertise into the governing boards. I'm wondering, Sam and others, what do you think about that?
Is Rick, Jerry. I personally would be very concerned, to be honest. I think at least in the next 5 to 10 years, I think one of the things that enables CCAs, at least in California, to be able to address state policy and, frankly, attacks from different groups at the state level, be it around regulatory issues or around statutory issues, is the fact that these are entities made up of local government officials. They're governed by local government officials. And that having that political configuration puts them in a much and has allowed them to be in a much more powerful relationship in these early formation years. I don't think we're out of the woods yet, even with the SDG&E, saying they're going to leave the market, low-serving market, and PG&E being in trouble. So I think at least for the first, at least next 5 to 10 years, we need to have that political cover.
So I wrote up some insights on this in a report in 2017 I can send you, and it's on my LinkedIn, Seth Bay Clean Power Business Plan. And this is also a key question for new states that are considering enabling legislation. New Hampshire, for example, saw fit to allow municipalities to decide who serves on the governing boards. So the governing boards can be municipal elected officials, they can be staff, they can be private citizens, community representatives. It's very flexible. In California, we've seen a number of different structures around this, And so we'll have sometimes the governing board has to be elected officials under the law, but then they can form these committees, and some of them are hard-coded into joint powers agreements. Some of them are ad hoc committees, and that those can be more flexible. And so it's a way to kind of leverage, to kind of balance what you're talking about, which is we need more representation or more energy expertise directly on these involved in the governance process. And I agree that actually elevates and accelerates the transfer of knowledge and informs the decisions that the elected officials take. For example, Monterey Bay, their board of elected officials meets, I think, four times a year. But they also have two other boards. And like for one of those is an operations board that meets more regularly, and it's composed of all the city managers who, you know, they're used to running operations. They tend to be there longer. So there's some staying power to build up expertise there at the person-to-person level. There's committees where we have community advisory committees that represent diverse stakeholder groups locally. And so you put all of those sorts of things together in a formal coordinated governance structure, and suddenly you have a whole range of expertise, a whole range of diverse perspectives flowing into the governing of these agencies. So it's kind of up to us how all of that gets structured. And there's a lot of insights and lessons learned that we can give to other new states and even to other CCAs in California that haven't thought about this yet, but probably should.
Well, yeah, this is Jerry. Thank you for that. We have quite a bit of experience with the, community advisory groups, and it does help. But my only comment is that if I don't think it's helping enough. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see if anybody else here who has not had a chance to speak has some questions. We only have a few minutes left. Guess not. Okay, carry on.
This is Peter here in Connecticut. Samuel, I don't know whether you've written much about what's going on in New Hampshire, but I think that I hope you will, because I think that for states looking to create CCA programs, we need other models than California, not to besmirch California in any way, but it's too distant, it's too big, it's not fully deregulated. There's a lot to learn and admire in California, but I think we need other models to learn from and to be able to display in front of legislators. So I hope you'll be writing about that.
I will, and one of my goals in New Hampshire is to, in terms of the materials that we're producing and working with stakeholders here on, is to have that be more generically applicable so that other states can look at it and run with it and adapt it. So we'll be putting out more materials, useful materials on that quite soon. And I'd love to keep coordinating on that. The other thing I'll say is there is a kind of prejudice against California, I find, particularly on the East Coast, which is not undeserved, because it's gone, it caused the first energy crisis, kind of looks like it's doing a lot of the same things right now. And one thing that I tell people is that, everybody has problems with centralized decision making right now and understands that the way that we've been doing things has to evolve. And California is kind of on the bleeding edge of that where everything's going wrong. But what's important to understand politically is that local governments and local communities are stepping up. And, regardless of what you think about California as kind of a centralized state construct, that's very different than what the communities are doing locally, because you know, what you know, Oakland is doing is probably, you know, you'd find a lot of worthwhile and kind of common sense approaches for you as a local community in, say, Connecticut to relate to. And so it's kind of shifting people out of this kind of left versus right or kind of very superficial political view, and focusing them on kind of shared ground and commonality and local decision-making.
Well, fair enough. I don't have anything against California, but I've had it thrown at me a number of times, talking to legislators,
yeah,
talking to regulators, that's California, and we here are a much smaller state. We don't have,
sure,
the resources that California have, et cetera, et cetera, which is why I'm a little disappointed that, for example, Massachusetts, you know, has stayed in the mold of single municipality, single CCA, and has not seemed to find a way to do what seems to be coming,
yeah,
about in New Hampshire, which is to have single CCAs that are working together to work in a more evolved form, and of course leaving out Cape Light Compact.
There's other initiatives in Massachusetts that are trying to really study how to evolve. So, and that's kind of the same everywhere. Like I've found all of these groups of municipalities that are looking at this and wondering what a more advanced, coordinated, collaborative model of CCA looks like. So I think, again, we're at this moment where it's going to start clicking for more and more people, and we're going to see this sort of systemic evolution taking root in a lot of different places, including Massachusetts.
We could also use a few more Clifton Belos around, too.
Agreed.
We're out of time. So thanks, everybody, for coming. Our next conference call is going to be a little different topic. It's talking about going big versus going smart, alternative path for home electrification. Tom Cabot, Rob Hammond, and John Walter will be on the panel, and that will be next Tuesday at, 2:00 Eastern time. So hope to see you there, and thanks so much for our panelists. Excellent discussion. I'll talk to you all soon.
Thank you, Sierra.
Thanks, Sierra.
And thanks, everyone.
Thank you.